Dr. Jim Green says he knew early on he wanted a career in science. That was reinforced by an astronomy class he took as a junior at Burlington High School. Green went on to earn a Ph.D. in space physics from the University of Iowa. Today, he's the director of NASA's Planetary Science Division. So when director Ridley Scott contacted NASA looking for a consultant for his new movie, The Martian, Green was his guy.
One of my favorite movies is Alien. You know, I mean, I've watched that maybe 50 times. So it was easy to say, yes, I'll talk to Ridley. And so once I knew that Ridley was trying to develop a movie where he was painting the picture of a realistic Mars, I wanted to help him. I had read the book right after we talked for the very first time, and the book had so many good things about it. I thought, hey, this is going to be a really good movie. Once I got NASA approval to do that, then it was easy for me to interact with Ridley, get him the kind of things that he needed. I could see he was building quality sets. They wanted to take as many ideas that NASA had been developing, that then would have the look and feel of what Mars exploration will really be like. And it should other than stranding somebody, should be pretty well like that in many ways. It is science fiction, though, you know, and so although I've seen the movie now four or five times at various premieres, I always check my science at the door and go in and enjoy it, and that's important.
And that's what I was going to say. I mean, for someone that you see all these movies that are about Mars, something you have studied and studied and studied, how difficult is it to watch one of these movies and see something happen and say, okay, there's no way that would ever happen? How tough is that?
It's not tough at all, because I put myself in the frame of mind of this is going to be fun and enjoyable, okay? And those things I laugh at rather than feel hurt by the fact that they didn't get it right. You know, I do science all day long, and this is just enjoyment.
Is there any part of the movie that they knew, yes, we know this could never happen, but we need it. We need it for the movie. Anything like that?
Yeah, there are several things. The first thing is the dust storm on Mars, which you know it looks worse than anything that would ever happen here on the Earth. You know, Lawrence of Arabia never experienced anything like that, but on Mars it's not like that at all. It wouldn't have caused any of the problems that forced them off the planet. But that's okay. You know, the author Andy Weir, who wrote the book that the movie is based on, Andy told me that. He could have come up with a whole series of things to have left Mark Watney on Mars that would have been technically accurate. But he really wanted – this was really a man versus nature story. So he said, I really wanted nature to give him the first punch, and I wanted it to be a good one.
Were there any aspects that you said, hey, I think it'd be great to have this, and then all of a sudden it shows up in the movie?
Well, I read the first script. I actually read a couple of the scripts and made a lot of comments. And then I saw that as they were going along, they weren't taking those. And a lot of those dealt with trying to make it more accurate. And then I realized all of a sudden, look, they're really trying to follow the book. And so therefore, if they take a few, hey, great, you know. One of which is... the dust storms on Mars, actually, we now have found that there are lightning strikes that occur. And so in the movie, you do see some lightning strikes that are associated with the dust storms. And they're not in the book because Andy didn't know it. It's a brand new discovery. So there's just a few things like that along the way that, you know, when I see him, I smile. I suggested that. By and large, I recognized right away what my role was. It wasn't trying to make this film more scientifically accurate. It really was trying to help Ridley paint that picture of what Mars is really like. When I realized that, then it was much easier for me to just get him what he needed.
How close are we to a manned mission to Mars?
Well, you know, I think we've turned a corner in a whole bunch of technologies. We are following the president's direction for which in the 2030s we want a human presence at or near Mars. So that could be, you know, some flybys, could be perhaps even landing or touching down on Phobos or Deimos, which are two small moons of Mars. And then in the 2040s and 2050s, the president wants boots on the ground. And so the technologies that we're developing, the activities that we're doing, the science that we need to do to support human exploration, it's coming on really nicely, and we're going to step up to that.
What's the next evolution of the research on Mars? I mean, you've had the rovers, you've had the orbiting. What's the next step in that process that further prepares you for that?
One of the things that we have to do next is really go to places on Mars where we can core rock, where we can look and interrogate the history of Mars. You know, like our planet, the history of our planet is trapped in the rocks. We look at our layers on our mountains, and we call that stratigraphy, and we can say that's the ages that have occurred on this planet over time. And so there's a geological history book right there. And that's what we got to go for. We got to really understand Mars, its past. We know a lot about it. We know that the past Mars was much more like Earth. About 3 billion years ago, it had clouds and rain. It had a significant ocean, huge water cycle. And we know the environments were such that they were similar to Earth. Our Curiosity is sitting in an area right now that 3 billion years ago, running water was there, and you could actually drink the water. And if we had human microbes, they would survive in that area. So those environments, we're now finding out where they are on Mars, and we want to go back to them and interrogate them more. We might be able to find evidence of past life.
And what would that mean in terms of life? I mean, when someone might hear, they think of human. When you say, though, evidence of past life, what do you refer to?
We're sure there's no complex life on Mars. So there won't be puppies or rodents or we're pretty sure that that's not viable. In its past, however, we really don't know. We're really clueless as to what that environment could have, what kind of life could have lived in those kind of environments, and how complex they could have gotten. But today, if there is life on Mars today, it's probably microbial. You know, that's the first start of life. So there might be a life cycle on Mars where it's had more complex life, and now that's died off, and you're back down to the microbial environment.
What would that mean for the research if you found that evidence?
Oh, that's huge. If we found life beyond Earth, then that tells us that life is everywhere in our Milky Way. That's such a revolutionary idea. Right now, we only have one example of life, and that's here on Earth. So having another example and understanding how that life has occurred, how it has evolved, the environments that it's lived in, it could really enable us a deeper understanding of our own place in the solar system and maybe even our own life.
Is Mars the best option for colonization from what you have found?
Yeah, I really think it is. Mars is the most Earth-like planet. You know, we really are lucky having the bookends that we do, which is Venus, which is way too hot, Earth, and then Mars, which is a colder environment. Mars is that planet that we can work on. We can work, we can do science, we can live, and we can return from.
Dr. Jim Green heads NASA's Planetary Science Division. He served as a consultant on the new movie, The Martian. He even got to meet star Matt Damon several times. Green grew up in Burlington. He was back in town to speak at Southeastern Community College. He talked about the movie and the planet Mars. I'm Jason Parrott, Tri-State's Public Radio News.